Yeah, I want to thank Neil for the very, very nice opening remark. Actually, I share a lot of concerns about the modern physics. So I will tell you about some possible connection between topological insulator. Actually, the key word is interacting topological insulator and the lattice realization of a grand unified theory. Actually, first I want to apologize that this work is a little bit old. In a sense, we did this work almost 5 years ago. I was a little bit concerned about talking about it today, but the organizer told me that it's okay. So yeah, so I want to just give you the idea about what we were doing back then. The work was done in collaboration with my former postdoc, Yizhuang You, who is now a faculty at UC San Diego. Okay, and actually we had a lot of great discussions with many, many people, including my my own colleague. Unfortunately, Joe left us. So since actually I know that the audience is not going to be, not all of you are going to be experts on topological insulators. So let me give you a very, very simplified summary of a topological insulator. So this part is a summary of a topological insulator without interaction, which means that the Hamiltonian is just going to be a quadratic of Fermion operators. Okay, so what is topological insulator? So basically, it means that topological insulator is all about the contrast between the bulk and also the boundary. So for example, if we talk about a d-dimensional bulk, and by the way, I'm taking the condensed matter convention, which means that when I say d-dimension, I mean d-spatial dimension, it means d plus one, space-time dimension, okay? So we have a d-dimensional bulk, which actually is fully gapped from the ground state. So all the excitation has a gap, and also the ground state is non-degenerate, okay? The ground state is non-degenerate. But it's d minus one dimensional boundary actually must be gapless. Okay, this is the whole key of our topological insulator. So we have a fully gapped, non-degenerate bulk, but also gapless d minus one dimensional boundary. And this d minus one dimensional boundary could be gapless Dirac fermion, gapless Weyl fermion, gapless Majorana fermion, or even gapless chiral Majorana fermion, depending on the dimension and also depending on the symmetry. Okay, different symmetry and different dimension may give you a different boundary theory. So it means that actually when we have a certain symmetry and a certain dimension, we can give you a list or table of our available topological insulator. And also another key is that the d minus one dimensional boundary cannot exist as a d minus one dimensional system without the bulk. Okay, so d minus one dimensional boundary cannot exist by itself. The simple example of that is that if you consider like a two-dimensional integer quantum Hall state, it's a one-dimensional or one plus one-dimensional boundary is chiral fermion, and we know very well that a chiral fermion cannot be realized by itself without the bulk as a one plus one-dimensional system. Okay, that's the simplest example of that. Of course, actually, we have a tenfold way classification of all the topological insulators, so it can be very complicated and very rich. Okay, but the integer quantum Hall, you can have that in mind as the simplest example. So this is the full classification of a non-interacting topological insulator, which was done in 2009. Okay, so what about interaction? Okay, so far everything I said was about a free fermion topological insulator. So what about interacting? So actually, so what we know for sure is that interaction can definitely reduce the classification of a topological insulator, which means that some topological insulator without interaction is a non-trivial topological insulator. But actually, under interaction, it becomes a trivial insulator. So what it really means is that, for example, without interaction, the boundary of the system, the d minus one boundary of the system, for example, d minus one boundary of the system, without interaction, must be gapless and protected by symmetry, must be gapless. But under interaction, okay, under strong enough interaction, short-range interaction, the interaction can gap out the d minus one dimensional boundary without breaking any symmetry, okay, without breaking any symmetry. Okay, which defines the topological insulator. So I will give you some example. So how is it related to the grand unified theory? Okay, how is this logic related to grand unified theory? So first of all, we know that in the grand unified theory or standard model, we are, above the electroweak, any scale, we are talking about wild fermions. So for example, we have a left wild fermions look like this Hamiltonian, and the right wild fermion Hamiltonian look like this. But actually, we can do a particle hole transformation, transform all the right fermion into the left fermion. And actually, the wild fermions in 3 plus 1 dimension, the wild fermions can be gapped out by a Cooper pair, by a Cooper pair term. I mean, in condensed matter, we call it Cooper pair term. In higher energy, we call it a Majorana mass term. Okay? But actually, in high energy physics or in the grand unified theory, above the electroweak energy scale, and in almost all the, I mean, I should say, in almost all the grand unified theory, if we count simply, we can get like 16. Wild fermions. Okay, so for example, we have an up-down quark for the first generation. For first generation of up-down quark, left, and up-down quark, right. But if we take a particle transformation, it will become the left wild fermion under electron neutrino, and also we have to add right-handed neutrino. And actually, so if we count them, there will be 16. Okay, there will be 16 of them in total because of the color index. So we know very well this theory is very difficult to regularize or very difficult to realize on a three-dimensional lattice or a 3+1-dimensional lattice, because on three-dimensional lattice, if you want to realize the left fermion, we are going to realize the right-handed fermion coupled to the same theory, same gauge theory with the same representation. Okay, so this is what we know for sure. So actually, this was already seen in condensed matter physics as well. So for example, there's a material. There's a very popular material called wild semi-metal. Okay, it has been realized in condensed matter system. In wild semi-metal, actually, we realized the left wild fermion and the right wild fermion in the same momentum space, but actually they realized at a different momentum point. So actually, in the wild semi-metal, we always observe equal number of left wild fermion and equal number of right wild fermion. Okay, so this was seen in condensed matter physics as well. Okay, So now, actually, one possible way to realize grand unified theory is doing something called domain wall fermion. Actually, we can call it realizing the standard model or grand unified theory on the 3+1 dimensional boundary of a 4+1 dimensional bulk. But as I said before, this 3+1 dimensional boundary actually has to exist together with a mirror sector. For example, this 3+1 dimensional boundary has a 16 left wild fermion. Then there must be a mirror sector. Okay, there must be a mirror sector with a 16 right-handed fermion. Okay, with 16 right-handed wild fermion, and the bulk in condensed matter language, the bulk will be a topological insulator. Okay, will be a topological insulator. Okay, so now this actually causes some trouble. So for example. If we want to just realize our standard model or realize our grand unified theory, then we probably want to separate the mirror sector as far as possible because we don't observe them. Okay, but suppose we separate these two boundaries far enough from each other, then the bulk, the gauge boson in the bulk will become gapless. Okay, it will become gapless. That's also not observed. So it means that actually there's a difficulty of doing that. But once we make the distance or the thickness of the fourth dimension very, very small, then we have to see the mirror sector. Okay, then we have to see the mirror sector, which is also not seen. So there's a problem of how we do that. So the question becomes, can we gap out the mirror sector? So can we gap out the mirror sector through interaction, without affecting this grand unified theory on the top layer, on the top boundary at all? Okay, suppose we realize this system with the 16 left wild fermion, 16 right wild fermion as a whole system without interaction, which can be done, of course. But suppose we can gap out the bottom boundary by interaction without affecting the top layer, okay, without affecting the top boundary at all, okay, then we can make the thickness very, very thin and still realize just the grand unified theory or standard model at low energy. So this is what we want to do. Okay, this is what we want to do. Okay, so how do we gap out the mirror sector? Okay, how do we gap out the mirror sector? The simplest way to do that, as I said before, is by condensing a mass term, okay, for the mirror sector. And this mass term is the superconductor mass or actually we can call it a Majorana mass, okay? But suppose we condense a Majorana mass, actually this phi, the boson phi, not only will couple to the middle sector, but will also couple to the top boundary as well, okay? So it means that this actually is not gonna work so well, okay? Unless we fine tune this phi as a top layer, I mean top boundary to be zero, okay? But that's actually something we have to fine tune. Okay, but then there's a proposal by Aishin and Preskill. I'm not sure how to pronounce this name, sorry. So perhaps we can gap out the middle sector with short range interaction while having this to be zero, okay? Suppose we can turn on some interaction on the middle sector, suppose we can turn on strong enough interaction on the middle sector to gap out all the right-handed wild fermion, but actually while keeping this Majorana mass expansion value to be zero. And actually then the interaction on the top boundary is still there, it's not tuned to be zero, but because the short-range interaction is irrelevant when it's weak, okay, it will flow to zero. So it will not affect the top layer at all, okay? So if this is possible, then in this setup, the only low energy physics is the grand unified theory. It's a 16 wild fermion, 16 left-handed wild fermion. It's the only survive. The only thing survive at the low energy are the 16 wild fermion is our grand unified theory. Then we can make the thickness pretty thin. Okay, then we can make the thickness pretty thin, and actually then that's what we want.
Can you explain what you mean by gap out?
A gap out just means that. Sorry.
What kind of action is?
The action will come later. So gap out. So right now I'm just talking about some conceptual things. So I will show you the equation later. Basically, by gap out, it means that the ground state and excitation will have a gap, That's what I mean by gap. Yeah, turn on a mass. Yeah, but actually that mass is not going to be a single particle mass. I just mean that there's a gap between the ground state and excitation state. I mean as the excited states. That's what I mean. Yeah, so at the low energy, we are not gonna see the gapped boundary on the bottom. We are only going to see the gapless boundary on the top. Yeah, then we can make the thickness thin. So it means that, I'm not saying this is possible yet. I will explain in what condition this is possible. Okay, question?
So I get that you wanna gap out the right-handed side with interaction.
Yeah.
Why is that, and not use a Higgs field or something? Yeah.
Say again, sorry?
And not use a scalar field BEV.
Yeah, I will. That's the whole point of the talk. So I will. Okay. Yeah, I will get to that. That's the whole point of the talk.
Why is that? Is that somehow equivalent to this condition you said here? Why do you need this condition that this quadratic expectation value vanishes?
Oh yeah, because if it's not vanishing, it's equivalent to having this mass term. It's equivalent to having this mass term. And if there's a mass term, then this term actually not only will couple to the bottom boundary, it will also couple to the top boundary. And it will gap out both boundaries as well.
Because you're saying that operator acts, couples to the left-handed fermions in just such a way as to...
Precisely. There's no symmetry to forbid it, couple only to the right fermion, but not to the left fermion.
I see.
But interaction is different. If you turn on interaction, I haven't got to the point to explain why that's possible, but suppose it's possible to gap out the, to turn on a gap on the bottom boundary, then the interaction, as long as we tune the interaction strong enough on the bottom boundary, but not so strong on the top boundary, then at the top boundary, the interaction will be irrelevant, so it will not open up a gap. But at the bottom boundary, it will open up a gap. Okay, this was the old proposal by these two gentlemen, but actually I will try to make connection to the recent proposal and a recent understanding of interacting top knot insulator, and we can see that this mechanism does happen. Okay, does happen in many condensed matter systems. Okay, in many condensed matter systems, based on our understanding in the last 6-7 years. Okay, in the last 6-7 years.
So what's the motivation for putting right-handed fermions at all? Because on the lattice, you said they appear naturally, but you're not describing the lattice picture.
So what's
the motivation for worrying about or including right-handed fermions?
Yeah. So we are talking about the lattice model, right? So if you want to we try to give a standard model or grand unified theory a UV regulation. So we try to realize them on a lattice model, but on a lattice model, there's a theorem, which says that whenever we realize the left fermion, we have to realize the right fermion. So the question is that how do we get rid of the right fermion and leaving only the chiral gauge theory, which only involves the left fermions.
So you are on the lattice, you're assuming that...
Yeah, right. In kinetic matter, pretty much the only UV regulation we know is the lattice model, sorry. Yeah, anyway. Okay, so...
Can I ask another question? So this mechanism of using interactions, is it clearly non-perturbative?
It is non-perturbative, definitely non-perturbative.
It is not possible to describe it in perturbation theory?
No, I don't think it's possible to... I mean, this interaction gapping out a certain number of wild fermions, that's a non-perturbative effect. So this number...
Domain wild fermion, domain wild zero modes are left-handed, and there's no zero mode for the right-handed, depending upon how it kink.
Oh, but you have to have another domain wall to, you know, so domain wall will have to have a pair. You have a pair of domain walls, right? I mean, so once you have like, you know, you have to have a pair of domain walls. So actually have a positive domain wall from minus to positive, you have left fermion, you have to have another one from positive to minus, then you have a, you know, right, I mean, the right-handed fermion. Yeah.
But you're just interested in the boundary.
Sorry?
Just interested in what's happening on the boundary. So that boundary is left-handed or right-handed. If
no, you're interested in all the low-energy modes.
Yeah, I'm interested in all the low-energy modes.
So you have to worry about the other boundary, too.
Well, Kaplan does it with kinks for lattice gauge theory, so I'm confused how this differs from...
I don't know how he resolved the problem of the bulk. As I said, actually, if you make the two domain walls, far enough from each other, then the gauge boson will penetrate into the bulk.
I thought you said 3D boundary means 3 plus 1.
Yes, there must be a 4 plus 1 dimensional bulk.
3 plus 1 theory with left-handed fermions. I want to live on the boundary, and my zero modes will be kink fermions,
yes,
associated with the kink.
Exactly.
This problem is solved.
No. The gauge boson will propagate into the bulk. If the distance between the two kinks are far enough, then the gauge boson we are propagating in the bulk, and they are low energy modes, which is not seen in our world. So actually, we cannot make the two kinks very far enough. I mean, far apart from each other. We have to worry about that.
Lattice people do this, so it's,
they have some.
They do that, they but doesn't mean they address this problem. They do that. It doesn't mean they address this problem.
Kind of claim to address it, but it's
I know that.
Very
but
complicated.
I know. Yeah, I've talked to Bob Sugar and. All the lattice people.
Fifth dimensionally bulk.
So one approach is that to make the gauge boson does not have any propagation or does not have any coupling along the fifth dimension,
right,
which I think is fairly fine-tuned, frankly, and not very natural, since actually we want to allow any symmetry allowed term in the Hamiltonian. Okay, so it means that if the symmetry allows the gauge boson to have a coupling, have a tunneling through the fifth dimension, then it should be there. There's no physical reason why it shouldn't be there. Yeah. So, of course, I'm not saying that this problem has not been thought of or has not been solved in certain sense before. I'm trying to give you a new approach and a new connection I'm trying to make to our new understanding of condensed matter physics. Okay, I'm not claiming this is the better. You know, if I claim it's better, it's gonna raise a lot of, So I'm not trying to claim it's better. I'm just saying that this is a new new approach. Okay, let me just say it's a new approach. Okay, this is a fair way to put it.
Can I just ask,
sure.
Are there any known examples of theories like what Chris wants, where any condensed matter systems where there's a charge that lives on the boundary and only couples to a gauge theory that lives on the boundary? Without coupling.
It does couple to the gauge theory in the bulk, but as I said, the bulk gauge field will be gapped out if I will have a very large finite size gap if I make the thickness very thin. But if we make the thickness very thin, then we have to worry about the opposite boundary. We have to worry about the opposite boundary. But so the only way to make the thickness thin is to gap out the opposite boundary. Is to make the opposite boundary.
Orbifold boundary conditions all the time, and that puts chiral fermion on the boundary, and it has a KK on its spectrum. But if you truncate on the zero modes and the left-handed fermion on the boundary, that's your standard model. People do that. That's how they play games with dimensional reduction, and string theorists do it. Everybody does it. It's the theory you want.
In that case, though, what sets the scale of the KK mode spectrum? What makes the higher
mode? The thickness of the bulk. the first KK mode is one over that thickness. And so I want to make imitate QCD, for example. I create an orbifold of quarks and gluons in the bulk. And I make the boundary size TeV scale, and I've lived down at the 10 GeV scale. I've now got an effective QCD with chiral, in that case, chiral fermions. So it depends on the anomaly cancellations. You have anomaly-free representations. But I think that's the standard construction.
So then that seems to agree with what you're saying, in the sense that if they gap them out by making it very thin, then they have to have this other boundary.
Right.
Where the other chiral.
Well, no, the orbifold boundary conditions have one chiral fermion set. You can think of it as
on that boundary. But then, isn't Carney saying you gap it out, they have another boundary?
That's a periodic boundary condition.
Mm-hmm.
So, orbifold is chirally asymmetric, and it ends up with a pure left handed mode. Let's say on one, I could draw a picture of what the lattice looks like. You'd see that it's a dislocation in the lattice. So, I link left to right. Right to left, left to right, right to left. And I pair up everything on all of the slices in this lattice except at the endpoint. I'll have a pure chiral fermion. That's an orbifold boundary condition. And it might be anomalous, so you have to worry about how anomalies are canceled. But I think it's, and it can be thought of as a domain, single domain wall, but then a thin boundary, a thin bulk where the KK mode spectrum is
yeah, if we can really realize just one single domain wall, then I agree. Yes, that's actually one way to solve that. I mean, but yeah, I need to understand that better. Yeah, I need to understand that better. Sorry, I mean, how do we realize, how do we justify one single domain wall, like one minus one, how do we get back to plus one without another domain wall? I mean, I have to understand that better. Yeah, so as I said, this is just about a new approach. I'm not saying it's better than the old approach. Okay, it's just a new approach. If you are willing to follow me, yeah, let's just focus on this one. Okay, so using condensed matter language. Okay, using condensed matter language. So this is what we understood in the last 6-7 years. So all we need to do, okay, so is to show that the 4+1 dimensional bulk topological insulator or topological superconductor is non-trivial. It's a non-trivial topological insulator without interaction, but trivialized by interaction. Okay. So all we need to show is this. So this means that without interaction, then we are definitely going to have a gapless top boundary and a gapless bottom boundary. And the gapless top boundary will have a 16 left-handed wild fermion. And the gapless bottom boundary will have a 16 gapless right wild fermion. But suppose this topological insulator in the bulk is actually trivialized by interaction, then indeed we can actually so this sentence means that we can gap out the bottom boundary by interaction without breaking any symmetry, without condensing this mass, with this being zero. And then actually the top boundary, the interaction, we can make it slightly weaker. Then it's going to be irrelevant. It's not going to affect the top boundary at the low energy at all. Okay, low energy at all. So indeed, we understand this does happen. Okay, this does happen for a number of a topological insulator. Okay, for a number of topological insulator. But for that to happen, we need the right number of wild fermions and the right number of symmetry. Turns out the right number of wild fermions is precisely 16. Okay, the right number of wild fermions is precise. So it means that this mechanism works and only works when there are 16 wild fermions. Okay, so that's actually, it's a quite interesting coincidence. Okay, so let me say that there are some works use the same logic just last year, just a year ago, and they have some more mathematical formula of doing that. So I will get back to this later, but let me just follow step by step, okay? Follow the argument step by step. So first of all, let's review the no-go theorem, okay? Let's review the no-go theorem, okay? So no-go theorem says that we cannot realize only the single-handed wild fermion without a mirror sector, okay? But actually the assumption is that there's an exact conservation of the charge number, exact conservation of Q, even at scale where the lattice cutoff is relevant. So it means that, translating to condensed matter language, it means that on the lattice scale, we need to have a U1 chiral symmetry. Okay, once we have a U1 chiral symmetry on the lattice scale, then this is impossible. Of course, this is impossible, okay? So this means that if we want to do what I just said, we have to break the U1 symmetry. Okay, we have to break the U1 symmetry on the lattice scale. Okay, we have to break the U1 symmetry on the lattice scale, but the chiral U1 symmetry may become an emergent symmetry in the infrared. Okay, in the infrared. This is the this has to be the case. Okay, so let me try to show you examples of how this happens. So of course, this this kind of mechanism, the interaction trivialized topological insulator, topological superconductor happens in any dimension. Actually, not just in 3+1 dimension or 4+1, it happens in any dimension. The simplest example will be the 0+1 dimensional boundary of a 1+1 dimensional topological superconductor. Okay, so this actually has been very well understood, and the reason it's very well understood is because it's a low dimensional system. We have a lot of Bose-Nadation conformal field theory kind of techniques to understand them. So this example is particularly simple because it's a 0+1 dimensional boundary. So it's a 0+1 dimensional boundary is really just a quantum mechanics problem. It's not even a field theory problem. It's a quantum mechanics problem which can be solved. Exactly. Okay, so let me just go through this very simple solution. So it turns out that the boundary of this 1+1 dimensional topological superconductor, which is called a Kitaev's chain, is just a one single Majorana fermion zero mode. Okay, it's a 0+1 dimensional Majorana fermion. Okay, and let's consider n copies of it. So it means we consider a zero dimensional system with n Majorana fermion operators, okay, with n Majorana fermion operators. And we define a symmetry. It's a time inversal symmetry. A time inversal T takes this Majorana fermion operator to itself, okay, to itself. And then we can see that any Hermitian operator, okay, any Hermitian operator, which is the I times gamma 1, gamma 2, for example, this Hermitian operator, okay, I mean, gamma 1, gamma 2 itself is not a Hermitian, because if you take a Hermitian conjugation, the gamma 1, gamma 2 will become gamma 2, gamma 1, and it actually is going to be minus gamma 1, gamma 2, okay? So we need an I here. So this term will break time inversal, okay? This term will break time because the time inversal takes I to minus I, okay? So it means that if we have n numbers of zero-dimensional Majorana fermion operator, then any fermion bilinear mass term, okay, any fermion bilinear mass term or any fermion bilinear Hermitian term will actually break time inversal symmetry, okay, will break time inversal symmetry, okay? So this actually means that for arbitrary copies, okay, for arbitrary copy of system, we have arbitrary copies of a fermion operator at a zero dimensional boundary. If we want to turn on a quadratic term, Hermitian quadratic term, it's going to break time inversal symmetry, okay, because of the I here, okay, because of the I here, okay? But however, suppose we turn on the interaction term, okay? Suppose we turn on interaction term, the situation is different. For example, for n equals to 4, for 4 copies of the system, there is a Hermitian and also time inversal invariant Hamiltonian we can write down, which will look like this, okay? This is the Hermitian and time inversal invariant, and this term can be solved exactly. And the reason it can be solved exactly because actually I gamma 1 gamma 2 can be viewed as a Pauli matrix, and I gamma 3 gamma 4 can be viewed another Pauli matrix because actually a 1 Majorana fermion zero mode is actually half of a qubit. We need a 2 Majorana fermion zero mode to make a qubit. Okay, so you mean 4 of them is 2 qubits. So for 4 Majorana fermion zero mode, this is the only Hamiltonian you can write down, but you can immediately see that the ground state is just going to be degenerate. Okay, ground state is going to be degenerate. It's going to be sigma z equals to 1. Sigma z2 also equals 1, and sigma z is just the I gamma 1 gamma 2, and we can view this as the Majorana fermion mass term, as the 0+1 dimensional analog of Majorana fermion mass term, okay? And if this term is non-zero, it means that actually the time inversal symmetry is spontaneously broken, okay? Time inversal symmetry is spontaneously broken. So it means that for 4 copies of the system, the boundary, the interaction, may gap out the boundary, but actually it has to gap out the boundary in a time inversal symmetry breaking way, okay, has a spontaneous break time inversal symmetry, okay? So, but the situation becomes different again if we have 8 of them, okay, if I have 8 of them. So for 8 copies of the system, we can group them into 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, 6, 7, 8, okay? And then this one, as I said, can give you a twofold degenerate ground state, and this 4 can also give you a twofold degenerate ground state, and then we can turn on another interaction to make a spin singlet. Okay, we have a spin 1/2 on these two four, these four modes, another spin 1/2 on these four modes, then we can turn on a Heisenberg kind of interaction, which gives you a fully gapped and non-degenerate ground state. And actually, because of fully gapped non-degenerate, it does not break any symmetry. Okay? So let me wrap up. Okay? So for 8 copies of the system, only for 8 copies, or multiple of 8 copies, we can turn our interaction as a 0+1 dimensional boundary, and which actually give us a fully gapped spectrum. We have a ground state, and it says they have a gap from the ground state. And the ground state is non-degenerate and does not break any symmetry. Okay? This is analogous to what we want to do to the standard model, because we want to gap out the middle sector without breaking any symmetry, using interaction, but without breaking any symmetry at all. Okay? This is what we want to do in the middle sector. Okay, so this is the bulk. This is the bulk of the of what I just said. Okay, it's the 1+1 dimensional fermion. Okay, so it turns out to be a fairly simple Hamiltonian in the bulk. Okay, so it's very simple in the sense that the trivial superconductor look like this. Okay, we turn on the stronger interaction between the odd fermion and even fermion. We turn on a weak interaction between the even fermion and odd fermion. This is a trivial superconductor, okay? And actually, for a topological superconductor, we turn on a weak interaction between the odd and even, but we turn on a strong interaction between the even and odd. So in the bulk, the time inversal symmetry, you know. So all this means is that without any interaction, the classification of the Kitaev chain has a classification of Z, which means that for arbitrary copies of Kitaev chain, it has a Z classification. It means that the boundary is always going to be non-trivial without interaction. But with interaction, the classification is reduced from Z to Z8. Okay, this was done by Lukas Fitkowski and Alexey Kitaev in 2009. Okay, they show the first example of an interaction reduced classification of a topological insulator. Okay, Okay. What this also means is that, for example, if n, the number of the Kitaev chain, is not a multiple of 8, then there must be a transition in the bulk. There must be a phase transition in the bulk between the trivial insulator and a topological insulator. So the transition can be very easily understood. So as I say, the trivial insulator corresponds to the even-odd interaction is stronger than the odd-even interaction is stronger than the even-odd interaction. And a topological superconductor corresponds to the even-odd interaction stronger than the odd-even interaction. But then you can imagine that when they are the same, if I tune the J1 over J2 to be the same, it can become the gapless with the central charge equals 1/2. Okay? So there must be a phase transition between the trivial superconductor and topological superconductor when n is not a multiple of 8. But when n is a multiple of 8, there does not have to be a transition at all. Okay? It does not have a transition at all. There's a smooth connection between this side and this side when there's an interaction. But without interaction, there also must be a transition, okay? Because the classification is Z without interaction. But with interaction, you can connect them without any transition. So all these has been all these can be shown very convincingly analytically, okay? Because for 1+1 dimension and 0+1 dimension, we can understand many things analytically very well. Okay? So let me see. Yeah, maybe we don't need this part. Okay, so now let me just, let me see, first of all, how much time do I have left?
I would say it's 5 minutes.
Okay, so I may not be able to get to the bottom line, but let me show you one more example in higher dimension. Let me show you one more example of higher dimension. So the same thing happens in higher dimension. However, in higher dimension, strongly interacting fermions, either on the lattice or in the field theory, is very hard to analyze. So actually, we have to rely on two tools. First of all, we have some arguments which give us some classification, and then we can check the argument using numerics. Okay, Okay, so this is also a fairly well-known example of interaction reduced classification of a topological superconductor. And this topological superconductor is a very realistic one. It's called a helium-3b. It's one of the phases. It's one of the topological superfluid of a helium-3. Okay, helium-3 has many, many topological superfluids. This one is called helium-3b. Okay, so again, without interaction, helium-3b has a Z classification. It means that no matter how many copies of helium-3b we stack together, it's going to be non-trivial. It's going to have a gapless boundary state. And the gapless boundary state is just a gapless Majorana fermion in 2+1 dimension. Gapless Majorana fermion in 2+1 dimension. Okay, but actually under interaction, it has been understood by many groups. Okay, actually the interaction will reduce the classification from Z to Z16. Okay, it means with 16 copies of the helium-3b, actually, or with 16 copies of the H-state, which is a 2 plus 1 dimensional Mariner fermion, okay, we can gap it out using strong enough interaction without breaking any symmetry, without generating a non-zero extension value of any fermion bilinear master. Okay, so you can see the 16, number 16 already shows up here. Okay, so it turns out in all dimensions, if we want to have like a, you know, interaction reduced classification of topological insulator, we need the multiple of 16 or something like that. Okay, so I will show you a argument, and then I will show you the numerical evidence for that. Okay, so argument goes like this. So this was the argument by Chong Wan, who is actually in perimeter right now. So this is the work done by him and his advisor, Sento. So the argument goes like this. So first of all, we consider two copies of the helium-3b, and we first break the time inversal symmetry by condensing a mass term. The mass term is the O2. I mean, for two copies of a Mariner fermion, there's an O2 symmetry, of course. Now, first of all, the mass term breaks the O2 symmetry, and then we try to restore the time inversal and the O2 symmetry by proliferating the vortex, okay, by proliferating the vortex. But there may be an obstacle for doing that because actually the vortex core may have some gapless mode, okay? Because our goal is to actually gap out. Our goal is to gap out the boundary, so we have to make sure that the Mariner fermion, sorry, the vortex core has no gapless modes in it. Okay, has no gapless modes in it. Okay, so what they have shown is that suppose we just solve the Schrodinger equation of the vortex core, we are going to see that for two copies of the helium-3b, the vortex core has a Mariner fermion zero mode, and the Mariner fermion zero mode actually will transform exactly the same way as the H state of Kitaev's chain, okay? The T will take gamma to gamma, okay? We'll take gamma to gamma, okay? So this actually means that actually only when N equals to 16, I mean, using the knowledge we have learned before in our 0 plus 1 dimension example, only when N equals 16, we can get a fully gapped and a symmetric gapped vortex core in the vortex, okay? In the vortex. Then we can condense the vortex and drive the system into a fully gapped and a non-degenerate boundary state, okay? So this actually can be made accurate using the dual picture. We know that condensing the vortex can be understood as like the boson coupled with a U1 gauge field, and a U1 gauge field is the dual of the Goldstone mode of the O2 symmetry breaking superfluid phase. And suppose the vortex has degeneracy, okay, then the dual theory will be a CP, for example, CP1 model, okay, CP1 model, if the vortex has twofold degeneracy, okay? So the V is actually the vortex, okay? So suppose the vortex has twofold degeneracy, then the vortex will be a two-component complex boson coupled with a U1 gauge field. And we know that if we condense this boson, the ground state manifold is not trivial, it's a S2, okay? So it means that if the vortex has degeneracy, then the condensate of the vortex will lead to ground state degeneracy. Okay, so when and only when we have a fully gapped and a non-degenerate vortex core, we can have a vortex condensate which actually completely restore all the symmetry and also keep the 2 plus 1 dimensional boundary fully gapped and non-degenerate. Okay, this is what we want. Okay, so this is the argument. And there's also numerical evidence. So actually, so this has been confirmed in both our group and also by a few lattice QED, lattice QCD groups, okay? So what we have done in general, well, of course, we model different things and we use a different algorithm, okay? But actually one thing in common is that in all our models, we have the equal number of Dirac fermion or Mariner fermion at a low energy, okay? So our model has some SO5 symmetry, and their model have SU4, SO4, I forgot. But we have different model with different symmetry, but the only thing in common is that we have an equal number of Dirac fermion, or equivalent to equal number of Majorana fermion. And it turns out what we found is that in our lattice model, we all do a lattice model, is that when certain interaction is below some threshold, okay? So it's a massless Dirac fermion, which is understandable because short-range interaction is irrelevant, so we have a massless Dirac fermion. But when the interaction is strong enough, by strong enough, I mean comparable with the UV scale of the kinetic part, and then we see a continuous phase transition. We see a continuous phase transition between the Dirac fermion, gapless Dirac fermion, with a fully gapped non-degenerate gapped state, okay, fully gapped non-degenerate state. Okay, there's a continuous phase transition. And actually, this phase is fully gapped, but it does not have any non-zero expectation value of any Fermion master, okay, of any Dirac Fermion master. Okay. So this actually is the example of a 2 plus 1 dimensional boundary of a 3 plus 1 dimensional bulk. And actually, of course, our goal is to get to the 4 plus 1 dimensional boundary of a 5 plus 1 dimensional bulk. But since I'm running out of time, I may not get to that. But actually, you get the gist of what I want to say. Okay, I'm saying that with the right number of Dirac Fermion, Majorana Fermion, or Chiral Fermion, actually, it's possible to gap out the certain number and actually 16 flavors of chiral Fermion or Majorana Fermion using short-range interaction without generating any mean field master. Okay, this is the gist which I want to say. Okay, okay, I will stop here.
Thank you. Questions?
Yeah.
Did I understand right? So in general dimension, the interactions collapse the classification from Z to C16, but in 1 plus 1 dimension, it collapses it even more?
No, actually it goes like this. In 1 plus 1 dimension, it cuts from Z to Z8. In 2 plus 1 dimension, also Z to Z8. In 3 plus 1 and 4 plus 1 become Z to Z16. You know, it's every 2 dimension it doubles, actually. Okay. Yeah, right. So.
So that's 3 plus 1 and 4 plus 1 dimensional boundary.
Yeah, well, by collapsing, I mean that collapse the classification in the bulk, but also gap out the boundary. They are two equivalent things.
But so 16 is the relevant number for if the boundary is 3 plus 1 dimensional.
Yes, right. That's what I'm trying to convey. That's the message I'm trying to convey. Yeah.
You mentioned spontaneous symmetry breaking in 0 and 1 dimensions, but I always thought in those dimensions you can't have spontaneous symmetry breaking, you need to go to higher dimensions.
No, I mean at zero temperature, you can.
Yeah.
Yeah, at zero temperature you can. And actually for the 0 plus 1 dimensional boundary case, since actually we only have one term in the Hamiltonian for 4 Fermion, so that Hamiltonian can be solved exactly, and the exact solution is that it's actually going to be. I mean, the double it's a double well, quantum mechanical problem, right? So normally for quantum mechanics, when you have a double well potential, actually there's a tunneling between them. But actually, in this particular case, there's no tunneling between these two wells, yeah, because there's only one term in the Hamiltonian, and you can solve exactly.
Any more questions?
Is there any remaining problem with tuning about so somehow to make the gap very large between the left-handed boundary and the right-handed boundary? Does it mean that the coupling of the interactions has to run very fast across as you go? If they're very close together, does it have to run very fast? And does that mean that it has to be like very strongly
has to run very fast?
If I understand correctly, the interactions you want this boundary to not be gapped out because the 4 Fermion interactions are weak, and then by the time you get over to this boundary, they will be gapped out because they're much stronger.
Well, it doesn't have to be much stronger. So there's a transition point on the lattice. So for any lattice model, there's a transition transition point. So it means that on one boundary, you only have to on one boundary you only have to make their interaction stronger than that the critical point. On the other boundary, it has to be weaker than the critical point. Well, I would say they don't have to be that different. There's a transition. So, yeah.
Okay. I just see from this plot that the gap gets bigger the higher you get above the.
Sure. Yeah, right. But actually, I'm trying to say that maybe we only need to be here. Yeah, we only need to be here, right?
If I wanted the right-handed guys to be up at the gut scale or the Planck scale, what sets that scale?
The
size of the interaction coupling?
Well, first of all, if this is the ultimate model, then it means that the T will be maybe higher than the gut scale, And then we want a gap to be at a Gauss scale. It means that the gap only has to be here. It can be much smaller than t. Yeah, so.
Okay, now you're going to give a talk this afternoon as well.
It's a discussion. It's discussion. So maybe I can finish the later part, and then we can take from there. Yeah.
Very good. Okay, let's thank Jake again.